This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of diversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
All right, you fucking dildos. Here's your goddamn pod.
Oh, wait. No.
All right, listen, here's why I have so much animosity right now. It's really simple. It has nothing to do with our readership or our viewership or our listenership. It has everything to do with the fact that I took the GRE this Friday and I totally fucking bombed it. And it has nothing to do with my prowess academically. And so here I am trying to figure out, like, where do I stand? Am I just one of the dregs and wastes who gets brushed to the side to the degree of I'm actually one of the people who should stand resolute and say that this fucking bullshit standardized testing system that we have, and this started with the Ohio Basic that you took in third grade, remember that shit? It started there, and it's never stopped since, and I'm here to say right now that I am defiantly against all these standardized tests that dictate whether or not we can make it to the next higher level.
Well, first of all, you didn't bomb the test.
I didn't bomb it, but it was enough to make it so that I can't get into the grad school of my choice. Now I have to figure out, like, I want, like, the school's 30 to 100, or do, you know, where am I going now, you know? I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah, well, I think you're exactly, I mean, but there is definitely a certain mark you've got to reach, and it's frustrating when you don't reach that mark. And, I mean, really, what is that mark anyway, after all?
Well, for me, all right, here's where I thought the mark stood. When I went into the test, I said to myself, I have to get at least a 600. And the reason why I say that is because a 600 is what's, at least it seems to me, is recognized by any Tier 1 or Tier 2 school. If you have a 600, you're pretty much thought of as, like, okay, they know their shit. Well, I did not score a 600. I scored below a 600, above a 500, but below a 600. And it pisses me off because I didn't make that mark. But here's why the test is faulty. On my analytical, which means math, which I blow at, I scored higher in math than I did in my fucking, in my verbal capabilities. Now, my contention is this. I should be able to walk into that room, hold up a copy of the means, and say, look, you dicks, I know words, they're my life, I edit them. And then hand that to them, and they should say, dude, 750 at least, let's read it, but 750 until we read it. And then, upon reading it, they'd go, dude, aced it. He aced the test without even having to, you know, figure out whether or not he aced it. That's where I stand on this issue.
Well,
it pisses me off because, verbal doesn't, it doesn't dictate whether or not you are that good at verbal.
No, because I've been in graduate school now for a year, and I would be very surprised if I did any better on the test now having gone through a year of graduate school, because the what they're quantifying on that test is if you know extremely, extremely obscure and very rarely used words. I mean, that's essentially what it boils down to, because everyone can pretty much do the reading comprehension. So it comes down to if you know words in these really odd puzzles, that's what it comes down to. And that is quantifying nothing having to do with anything. And that's exactly what standardized tests are.
Yeah, I agree with you. And for me, like, I spent weeks prior to this studying for the exam. Granted, you know, there was a good six-month leadway where I was sitting there and I would review quite... I wasn't trying to digest it fully, but this last week beforehand, I had flashcards made out for words I didn't know, and I had my girlfriend testing me on those flashcards, so that I knew the 150 most used words on the past 10 GREs, or whatever it is that this book, you know, tells me. And then I sat down and I did practice test after practice test of math, and I guess that paid off, all considering I got like a 540 in analytical, which... You know, for me, I gave up after trigonometry. I said, fuck calculus, I'm not going to take it. And that was in 11th grade. And then I had two math classes prior to that in college, and those were because they were mandatory, and I didn't even care about those. So, like, my math prowess is so low, yet I scored higher in math than I did verbal. I think that kind of... Well, I don't know. I think there's a definite fault in the system if I can do that.
What it proves is that you can make a standardized test for math. Mm-hmm. Because it's very finite. You know, there's certain skills that you've got to learn, and then you just apply them. And it might look like a large breadth of information, but it's a limited one. And everyone can learn mm-hmm. those techniques and skills and then apply them infinitely. But the humanities is not something that can be standardized because it requires, like, creative thought and such a huge breadth of information that there's no test that can be made to quantify someone's knowledge of something from the humanities.
And that's why I was so excited that I didn't have to take a specialized test. I was almost happy that I only had to take the basics. But now that I've taken the basics, I realize that's bullshit too.
I mean,
go ahead.
The fact they arbitrarily decided, like, okay, to test, you know, humanities-minded people, we're going to have them have to identify words.
Yeah.
Like, what? Well, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Because I'm on the GRE website, and you know what? This is even actually easy, but I'm going to just give it out there because when you're in the thrust of the exam, you don't quite know if you don't know where you stand on any of these questions because they could be throwing you for such a loop. But here's question one on the sample questions on the ETS.org website, which is where the GRE is given from. So, number one, color is to spectrum as A, tone is to scale, B, sound is to waves, C, verse is to poem, D, dimension is to space, or E, cell is to organism. Now, here's my contention on this specific question. I don't give a shit what color is to spectrum. I just know what color and spectrum means. So who cares?
Yeah, and you know how to use it. And you know how to use it. And the fact is, these sort of tests quell any sort of creating or critical thinking.
Right.
And being in graduate school, the biggest thing... I mean, there was a huge deconstruction movement where it's all about being able to, you know... It used to be about identifying structures and patterns within text, and then it became about identifying the points of tension wherein those structures and patterns work against themselves and fall apart, you know, and finding holes in text and other forms of meaning. That all of that isn't caught by these tests. That sort of mind, the minds that are really important in this world are not tested by those tests. It comes down to the old cliche, thinking outside the box. You can't think outside the box on these tests.
You know what really pissed me off the most was that when I was reading through my GRE study book, there's an entire section that technically, if it were up to me, this would not even be a section in the study help book. Because if you can't... All right, there's two essay questions on the GRE. One of them is you actually write a formal essay, you know, discussing where you stand on a topic. The second one is you have 30 minutes to analyze an argument that somebody else made, and you have to either force their argument and say, you know what, they were actually right. Typically, though, the GRE throws you something where it's like the guy's logic is totally flawed, and you have to figure out why it's flawed. Well, in the GRE textbook, they actually say, because there are X amount of people reading these, like human beings, and then the test itself reads it as well. But what they look for are key items, which piss me off, which are like transition words, using words that are used throughout the GRE, and then actually putting your composition into some sort of functional, like a five-paragraph essay, which pisses me off because it leaves no room for creativity. You couldn't tackle some sort of a problem like for me when I took the test, the first essay question I had was saying, should government only focus on temporary issues, like things that are not temporary but things that are immediate to us in the near future, focusing on long-term things. And so for me, when I wrote the essay, I said that, you know, the environment is a long-term thing that we need to legislate on because we don't know what's going to happen with it. We need to legislate on population control, figure out whether or not, You know, is China doing it right? If they're not, what can we do to do it better to make sure that we don't necessarily have, you know, these restrictions like one child per family if that's the case, or we're not? And then the third one is legislating towards preventing diseases. So those were three things. But, you know, it didn't prove... I mean, like, if I wrote it in a creative way, I would have gotten a 4 or a 5 out of 6, and 6 is the highest. Whereas if you write according to a formula, and the formula dictates sentence 1 states this, sentence 2 says this, sentence 3 is your thesis, and sentence 4 says this, and then you go to your body, your main body. If you follow that, you'll do better than me, and me is the person who's going to be writing creative how you do it, but it's not in a conventional terms. Here, you know, do you know what I'm saying? Structure doesn't dictate argument. Argument is argument only if it's good. You know, you can't structure that shit. And it pissed me off.
And I would highly recommend anyone who thinks there's any validity in standardized testing to perform any productive ends to pick up Stephen Jay Gould's The Mismeasure of Man, which essentially tracks various scientific and social science projects throughout history and how they've been used by, you know, white masculine power to manipulate scientific and social findings towards the end of, you know, racist policy. And
well, that's bullshit.
Of course, part of this has always been, you know, science, you know, phrenology and craniometry, measuring of the brain, trying to...
Pseudosciences.
Yeah, trying to, you know, measure the body and determine why exactly blacks are naturally inferior, you know, and fudging scientific data towards those ends and making up tests that are automatically biased towards, you know, white physiology. And then, of course, the other extension of this is standardized testing, which was explicitly bred out of this type of thinking where, okay, we've got to quantify intelligence so then we can prove our theory that white people are smarter than all other races.
Yeah.
So the history of standardized testing is directly rooted in sort of a racist project. And naturally, it's extremely faulty for that because, okay, we're going to make a standardized test that is testing these specific things that we know white people are going to do better on. And the same shit is happening now, where you have standardized tests being made that disadvantage people that might resist white masculine hegemony. And people still think that these tests have any sort of validity, and they don't. They're arbitrary, they don't count for anything, and they don't test anything well. All they do is to keep people that have been in power longer, and it's bullshit. And coming out here in California, the school system is full of fucking testing. Kids get they get tested crazy out here, and, you know, money, funding is based on this testing, and it's just all a big crock of shit.
Yeah.
And it's horrible when I see people going around acting like their test scores are so amazing. It's like, your test scores tell me nothing about you.
Yeah, I mean, here's a perfect example. I've been talking to several people who have done the GRE, and I'm not gonna try and be a dick about it, but you know what? I'm smarter than a lot of these people. And these people are all telling me, oh yeah, I did better on this or that part of the test, and I'm thinking to myself, unless it's because when they took it, they got those answers that they already had studied and knew, there's no way they did better than me, because if you were to set us side by side and give us a real test that would, like, explain whether or not we're smarter than one another, like, if you gave me an A-team, you know, who's the best A-team member, I would definitely destroy that test, and no one else could compare, I don't think. But if you give me a test that says, you know, here's a triangle, and of that triangle, we might actually put, you know, the hypotenuse out of proportion, and you have to draw that onto a separate sheet of paper and then figure out the fucking angle of angle A, which you don't know the angle of C or D. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, you, all that shit is such arbitrary stuff. It doesn't dictate a single thing. And so anyway, my whole point is that there's people who scored higher than me and they're dumbasses.
Well,
it pisses me off.
I guess the point is that everyone's got specific sets of knowledge, and the fact that a certain type of knowledge is tested by the GRE, and that type of knowledge, as we've already discussed, is completely ridiculous, figuring it's based on words that aren't even used. It's hilarious that schools actually use these tests and don't see how just absolutely asinine they are, that the specific set of knowledge they're testing has no applicability to anything. I mean, can't they design something better? I guess not, because it would actually take work to grade, like the writing section. The writing section is the best portion of the GRE, because it allows you to use a variety of different skills useful in the humanities, but then it requires an actual person to read it, so they can't do that. But we should probably move on, though. I mean, this has gone
really
on 60 minutes.
Really quickly, here's my ideal test. Question one, do you hate black people? If you answer yes, you are out. Question two, do you hate Spanish people? If you answer yes, you're out. Question three, do you hate Asian people? Yes, you're out. Question four, do you hate white people? Yes, you're out. And that's it. Like, all you have to do is answer, no, you don't hate anybody, and then you're a real human being, and we can start actually positively, you know, creating an educational foundation for people. That's my ultimate GRE. I would ace it, because I don't hate any of them. All right. What's the next topic? Rick Santorum?
Sure.
All right, he's a dick. Here's my contention with Rick Santorum.
I have no idea
this
who
guy
he is.
Came out. Yes, you do. He's the senator from Pennsylvania, I think. He pretty much. I wrote a whole article on him. Let me find it. Shit. God damn it. I wrote a whole article about him like 3 or 4 or 5, 6, 8 months ago. I don't know what it was, but. Essentially, his contention is that women are to be, in the biblical sense, which means that they are supposed to be, you know, compassionate yet obedient to husbands, you know, that kind of bullshit, you know, which subjects women to some sort of objectification, which is stupid, if you ask me. So, he's one of those types, and I will give out the URL for this. Okay, here it is. The name of the article was Rick Santorum, Satan's Minion. And if you go to www.the-means.com/k's/?p=127, that will take you to Rick Santorum, Satan's Minion. Regular blog page, you can just search for Rick Santorum and you'll find it. Either way, my point with him is this. Just last week, he decided that he had a document from the Department of Defense that said that there were recent discoveries of WMDs, thus justifying the administration's initial thrust for going into Iraq, which is bullshit in the first place because we've already given up on that initial thrust, and so to try and find a pertinent reason why we went back in there is such a it's a lame excuse to try and justify this bullshit war in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So. So he claims to have found that. Well, he's wrong, because what he found was that, yes, there was a certain cache of WMDs. However, here's the thing. There was no mechanism with Iraq that would fire those weapons, okay? Because they were destroyed in compliance with what the UN was proposing to do within Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall, the UN was in there, and they were inspecting, and they were fully... You know, they were going in and they were saying, look, this needs to be destroyed. And those things were destroyed. Now, if you're in the middle of the desert and you find a cache of weapons that are buried or they're in some sort of bunker that hasn't been visited in 10 years, at that point you have to realize to yourself that there isn't the immediate threat that he's trying to create. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to create this atmosphere of fear and trying to say to us, you know what, we were right all along since, you know, Double Lock 2, when there were these WMDs that were supposedly, you know, this imminent threat, and they're not, though. And so, and he's wrong, and he was called out, actually, on Hannity and Combs, of all shows, and Sean Hannity was playing into it, and then Combs, the douchebag liberal, he actually came in, and he's like, look, these are bullshit WMDs that you're talking about, as described by a certain organization who went in there and evaluated, you know, the criticality of these weapons. So my point is, though, there's people like Rick Santorum who are still trying to beat the old drum, and that drum has been beaten, and it's not going to work. And it pisses me off that we're trying to rehash these old arguments when the argument at hand is Are we going to let more soldiers get their faces fucking defiled by these asshole terrorists? Or are we going to pull out and say, Iraq, deal with it yourself? I'm not saying I'm a pull-outer. I'm just saying that we need to at least have a definitive strategy to get out of that place, because it's bullshit listening to what's happening to these guys.
It is funny that there still is no overall plan. It's almost like day by day they just sort of like, all right, this is what we'll do today.
But let's recall the 2004 election when we were talking about plans to get out. And what's Kerry's plan? Kerry doesn't have a plan. And now, it's the same thing we said back then, where we said, what's Bush's plan? Bush's plan is to stay the course. Staying the course equals disaster. And we've stayed the course, and it's equaling disaster. So, I mean, I will say this right now. I throw it out to anyone, and I will welcome it, because I'm really happy to debate with people. But please, somebody come back to me and say, you know, this is why Bush has been correct for all this time. Because, to be honest, I can't see why he's been correct since 2004. And it pisses me off that Kerry lost because of platitudes and these fucking, these derivative statements that Bush relied upon, where he would say, you know, he's a, you know, all he's doing is he's wishy-washy. What was the word he gave? What was it?
Flip-flop.
He's a flip-flop. That flip-flop stuff doesn't work because it's now being it's being implemented into this current regime. So tell me what it is that you and what it is that you've gotten out of things since 2004. There's nothing that we've gotten out of this. All I'm saying is asking for us to pull out right now, and it's no different than what he asked for before. And are we any better off with the 2 years since 2004? I don't think we are.
No.
It's a real simple answer. Two guys just the terrorists have just updated their, like, they've refined their tactics, and they've made it so that they throw come to a checkpoint, they throw a few guys off the checkpoint so that those guys will go fight, then they abduct two guys and kill the third one, and then when they abduct the two guys, they mutilate their bodies and then set them by a factory. Are you telling me that we've won the war right now? Honestly.
What's really going to be amazing is after Bush's 8 years, he's going to end his 8 years with accomplishing nothing other than Iraq, and Iraq isn't any sort of accomplishment. It's a stalemate. You know, quagmire.
Not at all.
So after 8 years, I mean, 8 years, he will have really accomplished next to nothing. And that is just staggering. I mean, unreal.
We went through it in an earlier episode, but, you know, if you look at his main policy initiatives, you know, after September 11th, which is a phrase I hate saying, after September 11th, he tried to unify the country with, you know, his bullshit policies. Didn't work. After the election, his main thing was Social Security. That is dead. Nobody is voting for privatization of Social Security. It's not even a fucking question whether or not that's on the table. It's not. And all that's left of this administration is these trivial arguments like, do we let women have the right to contraceptives, because, you know, God forbid that women be able to have a right to choose what they do, and instead we'll just let men have Viagra so their boners are harder for longer. You know, this is the trivial stuff that is on the table for this administration. They're trying to polarize us with gay marriage. It's not working, though. It's pretty much off the initiative. That amendment failed in the Senate. We're trying to reform, I don't know, just name anything. And it's just like, it's not working. And these are like desperate tactics by a desperate regime, because they don't have a solution for the real problem, which is we've got our balls in a sand trap and we can't sand wedge those things out. So, give us the real answer to a problem. Don't try to trivialize shit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just pisses me off. And guys like Santorum, they're always on the party line. They're always touting that Bush is, you know, the fucking emperor of the world. So those kinds of guys always piss me off, because, you know, when in doubt, they will never, ever quiver when it comes to issues of humanity. It's always like, will I get reelected? And that's bullshit. It's such a bullshit party line to hold.
It's frightening, and too.
It is. It is. But aside from that, let me think. To be amicable towards all parties, I saw Hillary Clinton and Debbie Stabenow and all these other women on CNN the other night. I don't know if... I think it was on Larry King. They had a whole panel of, like, the women of the Senate. And I'll say this. Senator Clinton is not my candidate still. No. I will say that Debbie Stabenow of Michigan was a badass. She was such a badass when it came to what she was saying. Whereas Senator Clinton, and this was the interesting thing, CNN was very forthcoming in this. They would film shots of one senator and always came back to Senator Clinton. And if they possibly could, if the person was or within two people of her, they would frame the shot where it was that person and Senator Clinton was on like the right or left side of the frame. They were definitely playing up the fact that she's the next contender.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'm not voting for her.
Me neither.
Yeah. She represents all that's wrong because she's so easy to cater to the moderate side, and she need not be that. You know, what she needs to decide where her policies lie, and she can't pander towards people who think video games are bullshit. She needs to look at women's issues and actually take a definitive stance rather than the moderate stance. I'm just saying she represents all that's kind of wrong right now with the Democratic Party, in that the Democratic Party needs to find a place to, you know, a lighthouse to come to. And she's a false lighthouse. That's what I'm saying. That's the worst metaphor I've ever made, by the way.
All right, let's move on
what do you
to
think of
another
her?
Rant. Because I,
no,
I
what
hate
do you
her.
Think?
No, no. I hate her. I
what
can't
do you
stand
think of
her.
You can take a minute.
I can't stand her. I think she's... I completely agree with you. I think she's... What the Democrats need is to be liberal and to carve out a definitive liberal space that is decidedly against all things conservative, so we can have a fucking party stance and we can have things that we defend. And
yeah.
The fact that she's like pro censorship and pro family, you know, and well, you know, obviously everyone's pro family, but using
yeah.
family as a sort of marketing ploy for a political campaign.
Exactly.
That is, those are conservative tactics. That's not what we're about. But she's
exactly.
using them, and I'm not about that. I want somebody completely on the other side, and that is ballsy about it, you know? A Howard
right.
Dean type, but
yeah.
that's not happening.
No, I agree with you. I think we're in really big trouble, unless, I don't know, unless we get Barack Obama. I'm going to say it again. I love Barack! All right, next topic. What is it? I don't even know.
Clubs. Clubbing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, here's what happened. The other day, or yesterday, I think, my girlfriend and I were talking about clubbing and how uncomfortable she has been at clubs, and that the only time she's been comfortable is at a goth club, a local one around here, where, you know, guys do not intrude your space, but rather they will dance around you, and in doing so, you know, they'll let you know that they like you, but they are not overtly, you know, grabbing your ass or touching your hair like it's a beaver pelt or anything to that extent. You know, they are very considerate of you and your dancing space, so it's up to you to realize that they like you. Whereas at these clubs that you'll find locally here in Pontiac, which you know about, I don't know what it's like out in Riverside, but there's these clubs where women will go to, and the women just dance, and the men come around, and all their whole gimmick is that they try to feel you up, and if you don't want any of that, that's fine, they move on to the next one.
Yeah,
okay. It's, she just mentioned if you don't want it, you're a prude, which is entirely correct. You know, you're not a woman because you don't want a man to be feeling your crotch in a situation where you're just trying to dance with your pals. So I don't know. I'm very much against these clubs. It dignifies some sort of alpha male mentality that should not be. It should not be glorified in any sort of way, because these guys need to realize that, like, they're not going to perpetuate the species. They're, like, the worst of the worst. You know, their sperm need not be seeded, is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, dancing and clubs and bars are all in some way tied to reproduction. You know, it's essentially the space where the fucking, you know, peacocks get out there and display their feathers. You know, that's what it is. Right. I mean, for guys like me and you, we don't have these feathers, so that the club is not our space to display them. You know, there is no arena right. for guys like me and you to attract females like there is, because we're not alpha male types. But, I mean, so when you go to a bar, you know that this is what everyone is pretty much there for. You know, everyone can say they're there just to have a good time, but there's always that element of, this is a space where males and females are, like, staking out territory. The right. difference is, in these clubs where it's all about fucking, like, glamour and hypersexualization, it's never pro-feminine. It's always a masculine space.
Right.
So when you go to that club, girls are meant to be objectified, and they either buy into it or don't, you know?
Right. Well, evidence of that is in that, like, whenever you're at a club, the male body contest, it's always, unless you're on MTV, but there's always a hot female body, and then there's these women who buy into the, you know, the wet t-shirt thing or whatever it is, and it pisses me off. I don't know what it is, but you mentioned that there's always a hypersexuality to it, but you know, I do know people who have gone to clubs, and the reason why they went to the club was because they wanted to dance to the music, not that they wanted to be groped. But they went there and they knew that there was a potential to be groped. Certainly, that's always a potential. But what we need to break away from is this idea that, like, when you're at a club, it's a necessity to be groped. Men need to understand that, like, unless the girl is like, dude, come over to me and grope me, there is no reason to, you know, rub your hand up the small of her back and pretend like you're going to be her boyfriend for the night. You know, it just doesn't seem... I guess you're right, though. I mean, for guys like you and me, it doesn't work. I don't know.
And what,
God damn it.
What amazed me is that in reaction, either as a way to inflate their own egos, or as just as a complete, you know, violent reaction to this sort of club atmosphere, I notice at the few clubs that I've been to, girls often treat any guy like complete shit.
Right.
And they block them out totally and just piss on guys, even nice guys who are just trying to be nice, you know, or just dancing around. They'll act like you're disgusting and stuff like that. And that even makes it even worse. The fact that nice guys are completely washed out by the alpha males then.
But can you blame the women for being like that? Because honestly, it's not the venue for guys like you and I to meet a girl.
I know.
Guys like you and I are going to be in there, and we're not going to be the guys who are, you know, straddling up next to them and fucking, you know, putting one hand on the floor and one pelvis thrust in the air. We're not going to be those guys. You know, there's going to be those guys who are trying to, you know, show off the length of their dick, but then there's going to be us guys who are going to be, you know, standing around, and if we do see a girl, yeah, we might go up and dance with them, but it's the odds are up against us when it comes to that, because they're all expecting a dude who's a douchebag. It's just the expected thing.
See,
you know,
I
think, the club.
I still think there's a lot of girls who buy into that. You know, for the simple fact they're attending that club, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot who want that sort of attention.
I agree.
And then they play into that game where I'm like, I'm hot shit, you've got to penetrate my hotness, you know, and then, so then they almost encourage a guy to be even worse,
yeah,
to penetrate the circle, like, it becomes like this vicious downward spiral into just complete objectification and reversing all the, you know, all the progress that has been made in gender equality and stuff.
Yeah.
But
I guess what it comes down to is that, oh, go ahead, what?
Well, I was going to take us into another direction.
Well, I was just really quickly going to say, like, what it comes down to is, like, aggressiveness within males is an inherent thing, but it's whether or not you show it in a public sphere or in a private sphere that matters. And if you're going to be aggressive in a private sphere, it can be extremely hot and intimate, or it can, you know, if you're going to do it in a public sphere, it's like showing off your fucking, you know, full house hand. So, well, my girlfriend just said it's a molestation if you try and show it off at the club. So,
I agree with her. A lot of those clubs are becoming sort of sanctioned molestation spots.
Though. It is. Yeah, it is sanctioned molestation there. So,
but all right, when you first brought it up, I was just thinking about how, you know, me and you were going through our high school on MySpace. We were dialing up our high school and seeing people we graduated with, and we were shocked by the immense amount of people who had not gone to college and then instead immersed themselves in the club scene as the alternative. So, like,
yeah.
I guess you either go to college or you stay back home and just go clubbing all the fucking time.
Well, here's what's easy about that lifestyle. Okay, if you're very lazy, here's what you do. You graduate high school, and then you say to yourself, look, I'm going to work a 9-to-5 around construction, and I'm going to spend every last dime on the keg each weekend that's going to go in my apartment that sucks. And then I'm going to invite tons of whores over. And all my old high school buddies who share the same outlook as me. And we're going to just sit there and have this like this immense orgy of beer out of a shitty keg that's dirty and dirty sex. And like that's all they...
But okay, we're acting like we're better than these. But we're acting like we're better than these people. What you've got to consider is they're winning at the evolutionary game. They're having all the sex and kids.
Technically, yeah, they're the ones who are going to be perpetuating the species. But in the end, we have to look at what's going on in our time. And in our time, just like Mikey and the Goonies, this is our time. And during our time, we are not about procreating. We are just about having a companion in life and having fun with that companion, but also like hanging out with our buds. And that does not include like objectifying women and bringing them into your home and then being like, which one am I going to do tonight? That's a bullshit thing to do. Yeah, they might be the ones who are going to be procreating and having the next generation of kids, but if you don't mind me taking a very conservative response to this, I'm not going to be alive for those kids to be, you know, raised by me. So,
okay, you can never, you can no longer speak about environmental issues then. Because you just made that statement.
I'm just saying, you know, it's a symptom of the smart people that the smart people don't have kids until they're in their 30s. It's the truth. Smart people don't have kids until they're done being smart. And when they're done being smart, they start having kids.
But that's a problem, you know, because we're losing out in the procreation game.
Well, then should we, like, hold a lottery amongst dumb people? I mean, there is no way to get rid of this.
Progressives...
People have kids at 15. That's how it works.
Progressives need to start having concentration camps. And they also need to start having, like... sort of birthing camps, I guess you'd call it, where
birthing camps,
where they just, you know, where you have, where you maybe, you know, once a week you go to a certain location and you make kids, and then they're born in labs, and they're bred for intelligence and strength.
Then you know what we do? Outer space, and then see how far they go. That's what we do. That's the only productive thing I can think of, because those kids might last a good 15 years and we can send them to Mars, but I don't want them coming back.
We need a plan.
Yeah, I mean, we need a plan with all these kids. I can't imagine allowing this to continue. The point is that the smart people do know that, like, you need to continue your own evolution before you begin evolving another life form, whereas the dumb people think to themselves that, you know, all they need is this carnal, you know, procreative, you know, I don't know what it is. They just act on their desires, which is a very untamed thing to do. It feels like it's a very primal thing to do, and they might want to, you know, reconsider that option, I guess, because they could work at the factory for another 10 years and make a shit ton of money if they didn't have the fucking baby in tow.
You know what I've always been thinking, though, is that, okay, Cro-Magnon men and dirty skanks have their places to meet other people, and those are clubs and bars and other low-life hangouts where you get drunk, you act aggressive, and then you go home and contract STDs and whatnot. But there has never been a place for progressive people to congregate and find each other. Is the internet sort of taking on that role, in that it's not about physical displays of masculine prowess and, you know, feminine-like attraction or anything like that. And it's totally based on conversation and personality. Is the internet in some ways becoming the progressive procreation palace?
I mean, it's hard to say. Does the evolution of the smarter people hinge on this internet, you know, I don't know, this artificial creation that we've made, or I don't know. I mean, this is such a hard question.
I mean, don't you know a lot of people who have sort of met through the internet and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, my brother met people through the internet before he met his fiancée, but...
Yeah, so, I mean, it is sort of, if you think about it, a lot of people are, and a lot of people that you could not picture meeting somebody at a club.
Yeah.
Or who have never met somebody at a club, you know?
I guess that's the problem, though. Yeah, you're right, because there is no venue to go out to, unless you're going to be really bold, there is no venue to go out to meet a person who's normal. I mean, I'm trying to think, like...
People say, like, bookstores or supermarkets. I would never walk up to somebody in a bookstore and say, like, no.
I don't know, like, today I was in a laundromat, and I thought to myself, like, you know, there's so many guys who meet girls in laundromats, and not a single girl there would I have talked to. And had there been a hot girl, I would have been like, you know what, she's doing her laundry.
Yes.
And I'm doing mine, too, and quite frankly, I just want to get done with my laundry. I don't want to compound that with, like, figuring out if I'm going to date somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't work that way. But, I mean, there's ways around that. I mean, if you're really a smart person and you meet someone who's another smart person, you'll hit it off. I mean, when you go to a club, there's always that person who's ostracized from the rest of the clubbing scene, and you can sense that. You can tell that girl is there, and you go up to her and you might say, hey, I am not about this, and they'll be like, yeah, I'm not about it either, and you can start talking. And then, you know, usually that's when two smart people meet within the clubbing scene, but...
Well, up at Michigan State University, there was none of those people at clubs. I remember sitting there in bars and just being so depressed at how lame it was, you know, how I couldn't hear anybody. I was not talking to anybody about anything I cared about. You know, I was sitting there paying way too much for drinks, and I would always leave early, you know. And it seemed like no one else was like that there. Everyone else was just having a fucking blast.
Well, it's because technically, when you're in college, you're supposed to be, even if you're supposed to be having a blast, you're supposed to be meeting those people, you know, by the standards of society, those women who are supposed to be your future wives or whatever. And there's no opportunity to do that when you're at those club scenes. It just doesn't work. You can't meet a future wife at a club. I don't know. It seems to me if you meet your wife at a club, she's kind of, I don't know. She needs to alter her lifestyle real quick if you're going to keep dating her.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
All right, we got to end this. Because I don't want to edit anymore.
Yeah. All right, let's end it right now. Wait. When are we getting this magazine out? All right. That's the end. If anyone is wondering when we're getting this magazine out, it's a big
yeah. If anyone wants to read about like 100 submissions,
we've got so many more to sift through.
I feel so bad for the people we accepted like in January.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Those people are holding tight. What's his name? Who did the Lamia Next Door?
No,
he's too busy shooting people in the face.
I feel bad.
I hope he doesn't listen to the podcast, by the way.
Yeah, this just in. Don't ever start a professional publication with just two people.
Yeah, it's a not really possible. Hard endeavor. It's almost impossible, because if you don't have other people reading, how are you supposed to do it with two people? We need somebody who's reading and updating the database that says, you know, who's ordering shit and who is reading stuff and accepting it or sending it forward to us.
Yeah,
because
so
right now, all I need to be
that.
Dealing with... I just want to be dealing with editing the stuff that's good. I don't want to be reading... Not that anything's been bad. All rejection letters I've sent out, those have been good stories. I'm sorry. Whatever.
Yeah.
They know they're bad. I'm not going to pretend. All right, we're done.
Yeah.
Anyone who wants to volunteer, message me. Sassafrasquatch, that's me.
You have been listening to This Just In, recorded on Sunday, June 25th, 2006, and distributed on Monday, June 26th, 2006. For more information about this podcast and upcoming issues of our literary journal and our blog, please visit www.the-means.com.
There's gotta be someone else. There's got to be someone else.